ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे जय श्री राधे इज अ पॉपुलर चैनल इन द व्रज एरिया एंड इन मोस्ट ऑफ द रेस्ट ऑफ नॉर्थ इंडिया जय श्री राम इज अ मोर पॉपुलर चैनल सो टुडे इन वृंदावन ऑल्सो इट्स इन द व्रज एरिया इट्स जय श्री राम एटलीस्ट व्हेन वी वर going around this morning, early in the morning, in front of the Hanuman Mandir. And here, wasn't it? Was it Jatiko? Okay, the entrance to Jatiko. Ram Katanga. Yesterday in Vrindavan, I spoke on why we should sing Jai Radha Madhava before speaking about Lord Ram. And, well, one reason I didn't say it was that because Srila Prabhupada used to chant this before almost all of his formal katas. I guess another reason is I don't know any kirtan specifically who praise of Lord Ram. There is one which we sing every day. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that's the best way to praise Lord Rama. There's one up here. Raghupati Raghava Raja Aram. That's a popular chant. Patita Pavana Sita Aram. I don't know if that's probably traditional. What comes after that? Mahatma Gandhi and his followers added, and we can chant this, but we shouldn't chant what comes after that. You know what comes after that? In India, people know. Ishvara Allah Tera Naam Sapko Sammati De Bhagavan. I guess it's not that bad, but there's no need to chant. You all understand what that means? You're all Sanskrit scholars, so you should be able to follow that. Could you follow that? Ishvara Allah Tera Nam. Tera means that's the most familiar form, isn't it? So yesterday I was speaking in Vrindavan about, because they have this 3 days before Ram Nami, they have Ram Katha in the morning, because they don't have it on Ram Nami, which is one reason I wanted to come here also, because the founding of the temple Krishna Balaram by Srila Prabhupada was in 1975 on Ram Nami, so they celebrate that. But personally, I'd like to remember Lord Ram, at least once a year. We should remember him. Actually, the main festival is, as far as I can see, in North India in particular, and probably in all of India for remembering Lord Ram is Dasara, not so much Ram Nami. Just like in the Vraja area, Janmashtami doesn't seem to be such a big festival as Govardhan Puja, for instance. Yes. But anyway, we can remember Lord Ram. It's always good to remember Lord Ram because, well, there are many reasons for that. One reason is the purpose of life. Of course, those who are Krishna bhaktas, they fix their concentration on Krishna. Srila Prabhupada often comments that we can fix our attention on any form of the Lord and or worship any deities of Vishnu. But then he states that in one Bhagavad Gita purport, and in Bhagavatam purport he states that We can worship deities of Radha, Krishna, Sita Ram, Lakshmi Narayana, but then in the purport to Bhagavad Gita chapter 18, text 65, the well-known Manmana Bhagavad Bhaktaha verse. Srila Prabhupada writes that one should concentrate one's mind on the form of Krishna who was standing before Arjuna. And he describes Krishna with a two-handed beautiful boy holding a flute with a peacock feather, which, we don't usually have that description of Krishna with a peacock feather and a flute standing before Arjuna. But anyway, Srila Prabhupada says that one should not divert one's attention to any other form, such as, he gives the names of various forms, Varaha, Narayana. So which advice should we follow? Should we worship all the different forms, or remember all the different forms, or should we only concentrate on Krishna in Vrindavan, as Srila Prabhupada writes in that purport? What do you think? Any suggestions? Which apparently contradictory advice of Srila Prabhupada? Yes?
Maybe the second later part is meant for the those who are in Bhavagraha form of it.
Yeah, that's how I understand it, that certain instructions are meant for different people on different levels. But, as I was saying yesterday, even in Vrindavan, it's not that people don't know about Ram, or they hate Ram, or they don't want to hear anything about Ram. And we can imagine that Ram Nomi was celebrated by the Brajvasis even when Krishna was present, because it's so much a part of Indian culture, and we find the gopis speaking about Lord Rama, mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, when they're accusing Krishna of being birth after birth, of not very good character. So they gave the example of Ram through Lakshman getting the nose of Shurpanakha cut off for the minor fault that she committed, or may not have been considered a fault at all. And elsewhere in the Goswami literature, there's a description of the gopis saying to Krishna that, you're supposed to be Ram in your previous life, but we didn't see you. Ram built a bridge of stones floating. We didn't see you do anything in particular. So we can't believe that. So Krishna got the monkeys to help him to build a bridge of floating stones over Vimalapur. I was told I got it wrong yesterday. So like this, the Ram Leela is there since time immemorial. It may have even been, it was recited even before Ram appeared in this world. So his Leelas are eternal, and they, more maybe even than Mahabharata, form the didactic basis of the Indian culture, Vedic culture. Because the Mahabharata is, particularly in Mahabharata, there are so many instances of apparent violations of dharma. So it actually requires a very keen understanding of what is dharma and what is adharma, and that's for those who explain Mahabharata to explain how what may appear to be adharma is actually dharma. But Ram Leela is much, the whole plot, you could say, is much more, very simple. And especially compared to Mahabharata, which is extremely complex. And for students of literature, it is a they might see it as a classic case of good pitted against evil and good triumphs in the end, despite all difficulties, despite all obstacles. The Lord Ramachandra is the very form or embodiment, for want of a better word, of dharma, of righteousness. And Sita Devi is the female form. And everything is done, Ram and Sita, they do everything properly, although sometimes there are some questions also. Especially the Banishment of Sita is the name of one book written by some Indian demon in English. So that's sometimes questioned. But otherwise, Ram's character is completely faultless, and he sets the standard by which people should behave. What is the proper standard of behavior? We find in Ram Lila the ideal standard of fathers, husbands, wives, rulers, subjects. Everything is how one should respect one's guru, how brahmanas should be respected. Of course, this is all in Mahabharata also, but especially Ram Lila has been recited, and not the didactic part. Do you all understand that word? So I know this. You don't understand what it means? It means morally instructive. Ram Lila is morally instructive. That comes automatically with the Lilas. And it's not just some stories which are told to make people be good. But the essential point, and to be good as such, is not the all in all of Ram Lila, because he is Bhagawan, and bhakti to him is the purpose of life. So people, they read, hear, remember Ram Lila principally for developing bhakti. And the instructions in dharma, they come automatically, because Ramchandra in this particular avatar, Lord Vishnu is teaching what is Maryada. He is known as Maryada Purushottam. He who shows what is the proper standard of behavior. And it also shows how by following this, everyone can be very happy and very peaceful and attain the best goal of life. Oh, there's another just popped into my mind. There's the narration of Ram killing the Shudra who is performing austerity. So that's sometimes also a question. Doesn't that appear to be a bit extreme to do that? So, this Ram Lila, this was, until recently, very much at the heart of Indian culture, and still prominent, although Bollywood culture has eclipsed it in North India. And what do they call it in Tamil Nadu? Tollywood, I think. Anyway, cinema culture has eclipsed the original culture. Otherwise, I saw an edition of what's that called? I'm just not remembering. One of the editions of, or one of the versions of Ramayana, begins with U. What is that? Poetic form? It's not Uttara Ramayana. It's one. It may be the. I can't remember now. Anyway, I saw an English translation of that from the 19th century, in which Maybe it doesn't make it. In which, in the introduction or the preface, the translator, an Englishman, states that there is not a single person in the whole area of North India, the Gangetic plain, who is not fully conversant with Ramcharitmanas. Almost everyone can, in their daily life, they'll quote this. And in all kinds of situations, they'll quote this to instruct someone what to do, or just as a comment about something. In other words, people, they lived and they breathed Ramlila via Ramcharitmanas. Of course, we prefer to consult Valmiki Ramayana, but and not just in South India, in every part of India, there was, maybe in Bengal less so, at least in my experience, that in Bengal and Orissa the culture is more centered on well, in Bengal it's Radha Krishna Gaur-Nitai, it's more, and of course, I mean, there's also the Shaktas and the Shaivas and all that. I mean, in Orissa also it's a similar culture to Bengal. Some parts, South Orissa, and many parts of Andhra Pradesh, there's a lot of focus on Narasimha. But everywhere, everyone knows Ramlila. In South India also, it's very prominent. It was known through the vernaculars. It's through the Ramcharitmanas in Hindi, and there's in Bengali, some version. Any Bengalis here know the name? Some in
English.
Kriti Bhasha. He wrote, and then in Telugu and different languages. In Tamil, it's the, what is that? Kamban Ramayana? Various languages that's been presented. And interestingly, they all have different versions of the Leelas, or slightly different, or some Leelas that don't appear in Ramayana at all, in Valmiki Ramayana, just like. In Valmiki Ramayana, at least that which is extant today, we don't find the famous, some of the most famous incidents, such as Ram worshipping Shiva before attacking Lanka. Although apparently that appears in one of the Puranas. And then Shabari eating the fruit before she offers it to Lord Ram. And the Lakshman Rekha, Lakshman Rekha and Ram worshipping Shiva, especially, these are two very famous incidents, but they, at least in the Valmiki Ramayana, which we have today, they don't appear. So anyway, this devotion to Lord Ram was inseparable from their life. It was so prominent all throughout India. Now, even now, something's going on. Still, they have this. They're even big Maidan. What's that called? Big open field in Delhi called Ram Leela Grounds, where they, and it's still kept for that purpose of. Not throughout the year, but on the Dashera, they burn the effigy of Ravana. So it's still there, but as I say, it's becoming eclipsed. But those who, especially those devotees who want to preach Krishna consciousness in India, they should be aware of the leelas of Lord Rama and at least the principal stories in Mahabharata, because even now people have some knowledge, even though it may not be a very clear understanding. They get their knowledge from TV portrayals of Mahabharata and Ramayana, which may not be very much accurate, or from these comic books, Amar Chitra Katha, or from the recitations. Like I was saying, it's still going on, and many people gather to listen to the recitations, but almost all of the popular speakers on Ram or Srimad Bhagavatam. These are two main books which are popularly recited, but they're almost always presented with a Mayavad twist on it. And in fact, that whole Ramaya Sampradaya, Ramanandi, it's all, even though they worship Ram, they're known as Ram Bhaktas, and there's a definite mixture of Mayavad there, as I was told by one of my disciples who's from the North Indian area and quite learned in Shastra. He said that if you discuss with any of these Ramanandi sadhus what the ultimate is, they'll say that, well, ultimately Ramachandra, we're doing bhakti to him, but he ultimately comes from the unmanifest in person. So it means the whole thing is, for actual bhakti, it's useless or worse. Maybe not worse than useless, because at least there's some idea, which is a mixed up kind of bhakti, which if people are fortunate to hear the actual message of bhakti, they can get the nirvishesha and shunyavad driven out. Plus, apart from nirvishesha and shunyavad, there's also outright blasphemy of Lord Ram is quite common nowadays. That, like I was saying, the idea, the feminists in India, they don't like the role that Sita Devi, who should be the role model for every Hindu woman, they don't like that at all. Because the role of, she's one of the role models, one of the principal role models. And they don't like that at all, and they blame Ram for banishing Sita, and there's worse things, and it's pretty bad. But in Tamil Nadu, one political party, for the sake of getting votes, they had a practice, they don't do it nowadays, of garlanding deities of Lord Ram with a garland of shoes, which is extremely sinful. Lest it need be said. So, outright blasphemy. And then recently, the government of India, when this question came up, they wanted to break, for the sake of making a shipping channel between Sri Lanka and India, they wanted to break what is under the ocean, what is known to be the remains of the bridge which Ram and his followers constructed. So there's a big protest from Hindu groups that this shouldn't be done. But the government of India gave out a proclamation that there's no historical evidence that Ram ever existed. And this was supposed to be a good reason for well, we can break the bridge because there's no historical, and then later they made a clarification. We're just saying there's no, in terms of history, it was bad PR for the Congress who made this, Congress-led government who made this. So they're saying, well, we're just speaking in academic terms here. But it's a pretty horrible statement to make. Anyway, what they call history, that's not evidence for the existence of Lord Ram. But anyway, it just goes to show that they can make such statements, which, well, digressing into more of Indian history, that was one reason why Mahatma Gandhi was able to garner support for the Indian independence movement, which people in India, they didn't have much enthusiasm for originally, because it didn't, traditionally in India, it doesn't really matter who rules you. Just someone should, as long as you're able to execute your dharma, it doesn't really matter. So they weren't so much concerned, but then he presented it as a religious cause, and him and others, and the people had the idea that if we drive out the British, then we can stop cow slaughter and this kind of thing. We can build a temple for Lord Rama at Ayodhya and things like this, which anyway didn't happen. But the sentiment was such that people wanted rulership, and that was a political plank. Still is, but specifically it was a political plank of the forerunner of the present BJP, or Bharatiya Janata Party. Was the Jana Sangh, and one of their main electoral program was that we want Ram Rajya. Ruling should be like that. And Prabhupada mentions that in one of his purport, without mentioning the name of the political parties, that even now people are hankering in India for Ram Rajya, because they had the idea, well, it was very nice to be ruled by Lord Ram. Everything was perfect. The perfect ruler was there. And everything else followed. Automatically there was bhakti, and there was dharma, and this is the standard. Lord Rama sets the standard of what a ruler should be. Of course, others also. Yudhishthira Maharaj is, Prabhupada also, that's another interesting point that Prabhupada mentions, that King Yudhishthira was in no way less of an ideal ruler than Lord Rama. But still, there's a difference in the perception of Ram and Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira is not the object of worship. Of course, he could be as a Vaishnav, but he's not the fountainhead object of worship as Lord Rama is. So Lord Rama appeared as an ideal king, and in many ways as a human, appeared to be like a human, but he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and has been worshipped as such from time immemorial. And people love Lord Rama. That's what I was saying. It's not just, they're not just listening to Ramayana to train people to be good. But the love was there. People, love was there, faith was there. People would, faith in the names of Lord Rama, people would go on chanting sadhu. They'd go on chanting even now. Several places there's non-stop Ram Dhun, or chanting of the names of Lord Ram. It used to be in Vrindavan in the 1970s, when we'd go from, if we'd walk from Krishna Balaram temple toward Vrindavan. Of course now it's all Vrindavan. There used to be fields in between. But there was one ashram on the right hand side of here, any time of day and night. Sitaram, 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 Sitaram. I don't hear it nowadays. I don't know what happened. Maybe there's a block of apartments coming up on the ashram. I don't know. These things happen. In Chitrakoot also, there's two places where there's, it's quite a big area, so there's two places where there's a Akhand Ram Dhun going on. Have you all been to Chitrakoot? Anyone? It's, of course I shouldn't say this to you when you're living at Govardhan, but it's well worth, it's quite a long time since I went there, but it's very beautiful and scenic beauty. We can understand why Lord Ram told Sita Devi that when he was in the, during his period of Vanavas, that actually I'm very happy, it's better than Ayodhya, it's very beautiful, and there's a whole description, there's a whole chapter of Ramayana which doesn't come in the edited version such as the one I produced, which just gives all the names of the flora and fauna of Chitrakoot. It's It's just a whole big list of trees and birds and animals. It's almost like a technical collection of the names. So Ram was very happy. And as in any holy place, we can feel very much the presence of the persons there. The Ram is very much present there. And there's you can do a parikrama also. It's quite a bit less than that of Govardhan of the hill. So yeah, that's recommended. If you have the time and the inclination, if you're going towards Calcutta, you can get a train that goes from Mathura and stops at the station, which is called Chitrakoot Dham Karvi. So, recommended. And anywhere, all over India, still, I was saying Ram Navami is not such a big festival, it's not such a small one either. Last year I was in Jharkhand, in one town, Dalton. It really had its original names also used, which I can't remember which is a better name. But just for the whole week before, they were decorating the whole area with festoons and preparing for Ram Navami. So that spirit is still there of loving Lord Ram. And it's a very natural thing, it seems, for Indians to love Lord Ram and Krishna. So that's our job as members of Srila Prabhupada's movement in India, at least those who want to stay in India and preach it, to simply remind people of this very nice culture and to remove the misconceptions also, because often people they do have many misconceptions. So we see that Indian people, they become charmed by seeing Western body devotees chanting the names of Krishna and Rama and dedicating their lives. So that's a great task for all of us, at least. Not only Western, but for everyone. Everyone has the duty to preach Krishna consciousness and cultivate simultaneously remembrance of, love of, service to Krishna, whose important avatar is Rama. Among the avatars, there's a transcendental, what would we say? The hierarchy. So the Ram, Nrisimha, and Krishna have been stated to be the three forms of the Lord which are especially merciful in delivering the living beings. Ram, of course, took all the monkeys and all the residents of Ayodhya back to Godhead, and by traveling all over India, he benedicted so many living beings. There's another project, which if anyone wants to take it up, it's a lifelong project, that apart from the well-known and Puranically established places of Ram's pastimes, there are many, many others also, which you could say it's by local hearsay, but it's been going on for a long time. And these are also places of Ram Leela. We have to be a little careful, because sometimes we find there's at least two places in India which are said to be the place where Ram met Shubhanaka. And Nasik is the well-known one, but in Andhra Pradesh there's another one. So we have to be a little careful. But there are not only Ram Leela, of course, but other forms of the Lord, but especially Ram, because he traveled very widely. That's by the arrangement of his internal potency. There's one of the things that Ram did while going to the forest and then later on searching for Sita. So he went to many places, and in this way he benedicted so many living beings who otherwise wouldn't have got his mercy. Just like Shabari, for instance. She was waiting there for so many years. Ram will come, and he came. She had his darshan and she went back to God. She was waiting all that time. So, yeah, there are many places, just like in Salem. Have you seen Nityananda at the edge of the city? It must have been out of the city previously. There's an old Ram temple, and it's not a Divya Desham, but it's run by Sri Vaishnavas. And Ram is supposed to have come there and did something, I can't remember exactly what, benedicted some tapasvi or something. I can't remember exactly what it is. But there are many, many such places all over India which are not, like I say, they're not recorded or not known to be recorded in any Shastra, but which are holy places connected with the pastimes of the Lord. So practically everywhere there are places not too far away where people can go on pilgrimage. Nowadays, of course, people go by bus to on pilgrimage, but previously it was by walking, and that's actually what pilgrimage is supposed to be. So the many merciful sadhus and acharyas, they established temples in various places in India, either at some particular holy place or just maybe in a town or by a lake or whatever, so that people could come and take darshan of the Lord, and then there'd be brahmanas in the temples previously the brahmanas in the temples just didn't do some perfunctory puja and accept donations, not necessarily in that order. But they would also recite the pastimes of the Lord and give advice to people. So there are many, many temples of Rama all over India. And so that's another job of our movement, to revive the temples and bring them to what the proper standard should be of worship of Lord Rama. One point I was saying yesterday in the class was that in Braj Leela they know about Ram Leela also, even at the time of Krishna. There was one point I forgot to mention, I meant to mention, I forgot, but there's also in Ram Leela some indication of Krishna Leela, in as much as Ram sent Shatrughna to what is now Mathura to found this. This area was given, you take it. You take it and build a city there. So the first known city, at least, of course, the Congress wouldn't accept it as historical evidence, but as far as we know, from Ramayana, the Mathura city was established by Shatrughna. So there's an indication there. The eternal city of Mathura, the eternal pastime place of the Lord, that was, it was all jungle area at that time, and Ram sent Shatrughna to establish a temple there. So there's a few points I made, not really very well strung together, but a few odd points. And you'd like to speak now? Please? Yes, thank you very much. So it's Jai Shri Rama. Is that alright? You're not going to get thrown out of the Gauranga Sampradaya for saying that?
Just kind of thought on the question of what Prabhupada wants to do. Not talk about other avatars or talk about them. Krishna tells us in the Gita, tasmat shastram pramanam te karya karya vilastitam. We should take the shastra as our authority on what to do and what not to do. There's various shastras, but we're supposed to take Srimad Bhagavatam as our prime authority. And what does Bhagavatam recommend on this point? It doesn't have an explicit injunction, but what is the Bhagavatam talking about? It's talking about Krishna, especially in the 10th canto. That's over 4,000 verses. That's a big chunk. But a lot of other avatars are discussed, glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam. So just following the authority of Bhagavatam, we're supposed to hear about all the other avatars, not all the others, but the major avatars of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam dedicates, I think, 3 chapters in the 3rd canto to describing the pastimes of Lord Ram. And Shukadev gives a sort of an explanation, or apology, sort of, why he doesn't say more. And the reason is simply that, Richard, you've heard the Ramayana many times, you're familiar with this. No need for me to tell you again, I'll just give you a summary. So that brief summary is still 3 chapters. A good description of Lord Ramachandra's Leela. If we spend 1 hour talking about Lord Ramachandra, that's perfectly in line with the standard authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I hope it's what Prabhupada wants us to do. I wasn't prepared to say anything, so I don't know what I'll say. Lord Ramachandra is famous. I don't know the scriptural basis of it as being Maryada Purushottama, the same supreme personality of Godhead appears in many forms. Ekopi sambho bodhayo vibhati. Even though he's only one, that same one absolute truth appears in many different personal forms. These are his avatars. So the same Purushottama, not some lesser person, but the same absolute, ultimate person, has these 2 major forms, Lila Purushottama and Maryada Purushottama. And what we can make of that is basically that Krishna, his business is to play. He does what he wants to do. And Lord Ramachandra is more dutiful. Maryada means, Prabhupada translates it as etiquette, but it's not just how to use a fork and a napkin. It's behaving according to the orders of scripture, behaving like a civilized human being by following the Vedic authority. That's Maryada. So Krishna doesn't care to always follow the standards that everybody else is supposed to follow. Whereas Lord Ramachandra is very strict about it in many ways, about being proper, about showing the example how to be a civilized human being. God doesn't have to be a civilized human being. He can do things that another human being, another person, would be considered a monster or a criminal for doing. On the prerogative of being God, he can do it anyway. He can destroy universes. If a human being destroys someone else's property, he's a criminal. God can have as many wives as he wants, and he can have relationships with women he's not married to. And Krishna does these things. When he and Balaram first came to Mathura, first day in town, how did they behave themselves? They saw someone on the street who asked some clothes they wanted, and when he didn't immediately give them the clothes, they cut his head off. That's not, ordinary civilized behavior. But Lord Ramachandra is much more concerned about showing a good example. he took the vow to have only one wife, and when that wife was kidnapped, he risked everything and conducted a great military campaign to get his wife back from the person who abducted her unrightfully. But that same wife, when there was just some gossip in the city that Ramachandra had taken back an unfaithful wife, she had been with another man, and some low-class person in Ayodhya was heard by spies, or Ramachandra himself, I think, in disguise, and went out and heard this criticism by a person who had no right to criticize. He decided, if this is what the citizens are thinking, then I have to banish my wife. So, in duty to his wife, and in higher duty, to even reject his wife, to save the reputation of the state, he showed himself always dutiful. That's also a lila of God. God likes to enjoy in many ways. This is his pleasure. So sometimes he also likes to be dutiful. Just like the children of the hippies, some of them became, you know, the straight edge. They were disappointed with their parents, who were so illicit in their behavior and uncontrolled, that they wanted to be controlled. They wanted to follow some principles, the children. So like that, also God sometimes gets tired of just doing whatever he wants, and he wants to be proper. This form of Lord Ramachandra is recognized by Rupa Goswami in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita as one of the... There's a list of three, there's also a list of four that includes Vamanadev, expanded list. Paravasta, or supreme forms of God. And Lord Ramachandra is second after Krishna, according as recognized by Rupa Goswami, also by Sanatana Goswami in the Vyaya Bhagavatamrita. Gopal Kumar, on his journey that eventually led him to reach Goloka and Vrindavan, the last stop after Vaikuntha, after Vaikuntha, he visited two more places and then ended up in Gokula. And these two places were Mathura and Ayodhya, which according to Sanatana Goswami's description and in his commentary, his own commentary on the Bhagavatamrita, the original Mathura and the original Ayodhya lie beyond Vaikuntha, above Vaikuntha. And there's only one planet beyond those two. And Gopal Kumar saw, even before he got to see Lord Ramachandra, just by seeing the residents of that place, he saw that they were superior to everyone else he'd seen before, including all the residents of Vaikuntha and of Mathura. I'm sorry, but in comparison to the four-handed perfected beings who live in Vaikuntha, the residents of Ayodhya above Vaikuntha are even more gentle, more possessed of all good qualities. Just as a real pure devotee of Krishna is a rare thing in this world, so also we may not have met many real pure devotees of Lord Ramachandra. But they're around. It is said that Hanuman is still present where Lord Ramachandra's glories are being, kirtan is being chanted. Hanuman is always there, even though he's living in Kimpurusha-loka, but he'll appear in disguise wherever Lord Ramachandra's glories are being chanted. So if we ever happen to run into a pure devotee of Lord Ramachandra, we should be very respectful and affectionate. We shouldn't think that we're superior. We're devotees of Radha and Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he considered Murari Gupta to be one of his closest associates. And Murari Gupta was helplessly attached to the feet of Lord Ramachandra and could not switch his mood of worship. But Lord Chaitanya glorified him for that. So therefore we should be very careful in dealing with the devotees of Lord Ramachandra. Especially those we never know who might be a pure devotee, especially living in a place as we do, where there are so many sadhus and we can reject, we can criticize all these so-called sadhus for not being what they pretend to be. But you never know where the real sadhus are. Anyway.